everybody, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Reebs.
And we're the Oh God Podcast.
We are a faith-based podcast that seeks to create community and space for those who are asking faith questions. It can be anything. We don't think any questions are off limits. We want to create dialogue and learn together how we can create more vibrant, authentic, inclusive spiritual practice together.
Yes, friends, welcome to a faith community that wants to redefine faith in a world that isn't quite as definitive as the church can often make it seem.
We did it!
Reebs, we missed you last week.
I know. I'm so glad that Connor got to come on, but it was very weird not like recording for a hot second there. I feel like I don't know what to do anymore.
Forgotten all the tips. Just make sure you keep your microphone close to your
face. Where does the mic go? Right. Yeah.
Oh, but how was your trip?
It was so good. Yeah. I went to New York with Emma. Shout out to Emma. She's also one of our patrons.
We love Emma.
But yeah, it was so lovely. Emma and I both have very, very similar ideas of what we want to do on vacation. So it was kind of ideal in the sense of like, we did not have to compromise what we wanted to do because the other wouldn't want to do it because we always wanted to do the same thing. So we did lots of museums, lots of shows. We were supposed to so I just got bombarded with snow both sides of the trip because my first day in New York, we got slammed with a bomb cyclone and like everything shut down, which Emma had traveled to New York before when there had been a bomb cyclone and was like, it should be fine. Like it'll just be snowy, but everything will keep going. Like it usually nothing cancels because like it's New York and they're used to snow, but everything canceled because it was super bad. So, we woke up the first morning and like all of our stuff had been canceled, which was like kind of a bummer, but it actually ended up being my favorite day because we ended up just going to Times Square and getting like last minute tickets to the Office, a parody musical, which was life-changing.
Love
it.
That
was so funny. And
that is the ideal trip.
It really was.
I want to go see the
like that might have been one of my favorite parts because it was like this really small theater, like really small, probably like 75 seats max, maybe 100, I don't know. I'm not good at spatial awareness, but pretty small. And then we were like second row back. And there were only maybe 15 people in the theater. Like they definitely, it was not sold out. So it was me cackling and honking and Emma next to me, like also like crying, laughing, but like trying to stifle it because there were only 15 people in the theater. And so we were just like literally in tears, like thrashing. We were laughing so hard and like no one else thought it was that funny. And I was like, all right.
Lame.
Yeah, it was so good. I don't think I've laughed so hard like consecutively in my life. So that was phenomenal. And then we saw the Harry Potter Cursed Child that night, which I hadn't I had it on my list of like eventually I'll go see it, but it wasn't like high up on the list, you know? But we were like, you know what? We both liked Harry Potter. Let's just do it. The tickets are a good deal. It was so good. Like, I can't really explain just like how truly magical like all the set changes and things were. And like Emma and I are both kind of nerds like about theater. And so we kept like looking at each other and being like, how did they move? Like, how did they do that set change? Like, they had these like crazy effects and like the scoring was really good. Like the music was good and the lighting was phenomenal. I mean, it won several Tonys. So like we should have known that it was going to be just mind blowing, but it truly was mind blowing. Not that they need me to tell them that, but it was good. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then we saw Book of Mormon and
I'm so jealous.
Six, which is like, they were all phenomenal. It was so good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you. And then you got stuck there for 2 days. Trying to come home.
Yeah. So on my way home, I was supposed to fly from New York to Chicago and then Chicago to Columbia. When I was in the airport at New York about to board the plane, I got a notification that my second flight was canceled. And I was like, oh no. So I was like on the phone with American Airlines and they were like, well, we can either rebook the entire trip from New York to Columbia or you can just go to Chicago and then we'll rebook your second flight. And I was like, you know what? let's just at least get to Chicago. We'll do that. And then I'll go all the way home. So, then I got stranded in Chicago for 2 nights because it was like such a terrible winter storm. Yeah. But you know, it was fine. I got travel insurance. So let this be your PSA, everyone.
Always
to get the $20 add-on. Yes, because otherwise I would be out like $500 on hotel rooms and food and like taxis. Like it just was, it could have been a mess. And like, thank God that I'm a nervous Nelly and added on the $25 like travel insurance. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
It was nice to have a king bed to myself. So
I bet. You know? Honestly, there's something really magical about staying in a hotel room by yourself, right. Especially one it that you're not paying adult. For.
Right. And like not allowed. I was like a free vacation, even though I was like working remotely. But, yeah. You know, it was what it was.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
How are you?
Oh, my gosh.
I literally haven't talked to you in like forever.
I know. It's been way too long because life has been just crazy. I'm good. What updates have been happening? I had to buy a car. So that was a kind of exciting thing.
Oh, my gosh.
My car is no longer with us. Rest in peace. But thankfully, I was like already planning on getting a new car in the next year. So I had like some idea of what I wanted and generally like what I could finesse out price point wise. So I have a new Escape and she is real, not like brand new. I like it to use, but it's new to me Escape. Yeah. And great. She's really great. She's blue. It's fun to drive. We're loving it. That. So now I have more trunk space to throw stuff in. And never say it again. Nice.
Okay.
We love that for me.
To throw in the void.
Oh, there's a much larger black hole in the back of my car now, which will be great for everyone. Uh-huh. So like that's been really good. Also like work has been really fun too. I took a position for people who are new and listening. I took a position with the church in St. Louis over, the end of last year. Like I started in November. And I like coordinate all of our young adult ministry and I'm working right now on like starting this like monthly event and getting groups going. And like, I feel like I'm actually doing things now. So that has been fun. Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah. And then other than that, I'm binge watching like bad TV and book reading excessively. So things are pretty much the same.
Nice. I've been bad about reading. I got off track when I went to New York and I haven't quite gotten back up to it yet. I've been trying to get through Game of Thrones and I've been like rewatching How I Met Your Mother because when we were in New York, we went to the bar that they like based it off of, which was like cute and fun. That show does not hold up. It just relies on like cheap, offensive jokes.
Yep.
I love like some of the writing and the way they tell the story. I have started watching. Have you watched the like new Hilary Duff one?
I haven't.
It's pretty cute. I've been watching it and it's like really sweet. It's very nostalgic.
Yeah. I trust Hilary. So I figured it would be good. I just right now I'm in a black hole of bad TV. Like Love is Blind, mm-hmm. The second season is currently dropping episodes.
Oh, Sarah was just telling me to watch that yesterday.
I do have some feelings about it, but I also just love a bad TV. Obviously that's a goodie. Or all of Selling Sunset. That's where I've been living.
Not seen that.
It's so bad. It's good.
I'm not really a reality TV person.
I can't let myself be because this is what happens. Is I get hooked on a storyline. And you know me. Once I get a little taste of any kind of drama, I'm like, well, I've got to see it through.
Right. Yeah. I think, I kind of was into Bachelor when I was in college only because some of my friends would do like Bachelor Mondays, but that was about it. And I would be the annoying one who would sit there and like make jokes and like make fun of the show. And so everyone hated to invite me because I would just rip it to shreds. So I slowly was not invited back anymore. But I was fine with it. I didn't really like Bachelor. I mean, it was an intentional thing. It just, anyways.
I will say Love is Blind is my favorite love reality show because it's everyone is like dating everyone. So you get the element of the guys and the girls like living in a house, like respectively.
Is it different from Love Island?
Yeah, no, this is totally different. So this is
That sounds kind of like
they don't see each other. They can't see each other until they get engaged.
Yeah, hence the title. Right. Got it. Okay. So, yes.
But,
right.
But they literally date through a wall for like a week, and then some of them end up making a connection and getting engaged. Then they take a week long vacation as a large group, in the Bahamas, and then they have to live together for 4 weeks, and then they decide if they want to get married. So it's like you get engaged, you see each other, you see if you can build something off of it. And one of my absolute favorite, like just like couples came out of Love is Blind. And of course, in this moment, I'm blanking on their name because why would I be able to remember as soon as I say that they're my favorite?
Right.
But they're the Hamiltons, the Hamiltons. I remember their last name. But they're just so cute. But like, there's so much tea with this season that I'm like, where's it going to go? Mm. But Netflix is dropping it episode by episode, which is stupid.
Oh, so annoying. That's not how TV works anymore.
I know.
Netflix.
I was like, I'm not paying
you
for
changed
this.
The way it works.
I'm paying to binge. Right. Give me.
No, let me binge it all in one day with no self-respect for my time or my needs.
Let me be disgusting on my couch.
Right.
Give me the content.
Wow. Okay, well, we have a slight announcement.
Yes.
So, Maddie and I have been in much discussion, and we sadly need to downgrade some of our tier system for Patreon. We are both big idea people, and right now our lives are very, very busy, and we just want to make sure that we are offering things that we're actually able to offer while also respecting like our boundaries and things that are going to be like actually beneficial. Cause we super love and appreciate all of our patrons. So we want to make sure that you guys are able to get the most out of your money, through supporting us. So
yeah. So yeah, kind of like Reap said, like our goal is to be able to do the highest quality thing that we can, with the time that we're able to do. And I think in the last year, both of our like career lives and family lives went from like 0 to 60 just in 2 seconds. Which is wonderful in that I feel like both of us are like grooving in that space, but also
right.
It makes it hard. But I am excited about this because I think it is both sustainable on our end and beneficial for you.
Right.
And our goal is to like always create a space where you feel like you're getting something out of it. So the tier updates are going to look like this. Just as a brief overview, you can also get way more information on our website. So definitely check that out. It's ogodpod.com for like the full deets. But our $1 tier is like the exact same. That one's not going to change at all.
Right.
We're going to keep our $5 tier. That one, you know, you get access to our Discord. As you do with the $1 tier, you get access to community calls. You get your name on the website, and we're adding a 15% discount code to our shop that stands like all the time. So anytime you want to go buy some gear or you want to get something new that we might be putting out, like you always get 15% off. And then we're keeping our $15 tier, and you get all of the same benefits as all of the tiers listed above. But this time you get a tote. When you sign up for that tier, and if you're currently a $15 tier member, we're going to send you a tote so that you get yours as well.
Right.
But then every year you also get your choice of t-shirt off of our shop. So we're kind of zhuzhing up our merch options and making sure that you have access to some really cool stuff. And we hope that that'll be, a way for you to feel like you have the connectedness to the community, which is really what we're hoping for.
Yeah. So the main thing is we want to make sure that we're keeping the community calls because like that in the Discord, because those are the things we want to drive towards and focus on. And just because of how busy things have been and how thin we've been spread, we've not been able to focus on those things. So we want to get back to the things that we think are exciting and the things that are going to build community while also giving you a few extra perks with merch if you want it, or t-shirts or just little like thank you things.
So today we're talking a little bit and kind of building off of our previous episode and conversation around mega churches, to discuss this kind of large church mega conference culture, and the ways that it is both beneficial and in some ways holds the potential to be really harmful to faith communities. And hopefully also what I'm hoping I find in the middle of this conversation is a way to redefine my relationship to these things so that I can find a way forward that allows me to participate without feeling like I'm doing myself or my faith an injustice. So yeah, I feel like there's a lot that we could talk about in this. But really just kind of overall, I feel like opening it up, Reebs, maybe with kind of some of the things that you feel when you see conferences like this, some of your like initial thoughts around really big conferences, then maybe we can kind of build from there.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I don't see anything innately wrong with having large conferences, having large churches. You know, I think in our mega church episode, we kind of dive a little deeper into our feelings around mega churches and how effective we think they are, how beneficial slash harmful they could be or have the potential to be, and, you know, how it all just comes down to intention, like with so many of our conversations. And not just intention, but like potential consequences or how things can ripple out, and good intentions don't necessarily equal like good actions. So all of that to say, I think in my thoughts around big conferences, like I immediately think about passion because that's what I experienced, right? Like we had my youth group, like in high school and early college, would always go to Passion. We'd always like buy tickets together and then like all go together and whatnot. And I loved it. Like at the time, loved it. Always looked forward to like spending the new year with that conference, and really liked the speakers again at the time. And it was this space to like get excited around other, like, you know, young Christians and learning and inspiration and all those things. Right. However, I feel like towards the end of that, I remember thinking like, oh, this feels a little showboaty. Mm-hmm. I remember times where Louis Giglio would like drive around the stadium in this super expensive car. And granted, I can't remember the sermon, but I remember at the time being like, it seems like that doesn't fit. Right. Like, why are you driving around this car right now? For what purpose?
Yeah.
There was like a few other things where they did like a whole giveaway moment or seemed a little wasteful, over the top for the like shock factor almost, and not so much for like the message and the content. Yeah.
I agree with all of that. Like, I feel like Passion is the one that has happened the most recently. So it's kind of in the forefront of the conversation around big conferences like this. So I will also disclaim that Passion is the example that we use in part lot of this that we're hoping to use. But it also is not the only conference that exists like
Absolutely.
This at all.
No.
And I mean, I very similarly, like I've been to a lot of really large Christian conferences. Some of them I've had wonderful experiences at. Some of them I have left feeling like I probably won't go back to that again. It just kind of depends. But I think that there's this conversation around the like the ethicalness of conferences like that. Both in like how the money that you pay is being spent, and also in the way in which it's structured, that is an important one to have. Because what I would hope to believe about conferences like Passion and the people who lead it, like what I want to believe so badly is that there is a true initial deep desire to structure those things in a way that allow people to have a spiritual moment amongst community. Like I want to believe that that is true.
Right. And like getting young people excited.
Right. You know? Like, I think that that's important. And I think in the conversation, and you and I can both kind of speak to this working with young people, like sometimes when people attempt to try to make something young or hip or cool, you can do that, but you can also run the risk of making it a very superficial and very shallow and sometimes like spiritually manipulative space.
Right.
Because you're working with young people who are trying to process what they believe to be true for themselves at this conference. And you're creating these like big moments that they're never going to be able to recreate in their day-to-day lives, and it keeps them hooked and keeps them coming back year after year.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a large reason why I went back. Like, I maybe went 3 times. I don't know. But, yeah, I think the way I see it, yes, there are good intentions, right? Like the idea, you know, I'm sure they sat around and thought like, wow, numbers of young people in church are declining. Why? Let's figure out a solution for that. Let's get people excited. Let's get people back in the church. And I think the intentions are good. And it got maybe showboaty in some senses, or in some areas has like lost the message or the intent, or isn't aware of the harm that can be done. And at what point do we need to shift the vision if there's more harm being done than there is like benefit?
Right. Well, and there's also, I think, this like new reality with conferences, which is why I think this conversation is so important, which is that now that we're living in an age of church where so much of it is happening online, there are so many people who are going to follow you, especially in the 18 to 25 year old range, which a lot of these conferences target, that are never going to be there in person because they're always going to be streaming online. And conferences are a beautiful opportunity to get someone to show up and to meet them and to see them and to welcome them in and to create human connection. And so I think that they're a really valuable part of the digital ministry process when they're done well. And so that's where, like, I look at what is being done and I see things I really love and I see things I really hate. And I'm really hopeful right. that there is a way for these large groups of people to move forward together that is safe. And I think living in a still
right.
COVID world, the safety of the thing is what right. is really important. And
yes,
I've seen, like, in 2020, I attended VU conference, which I had gone in person once, loved it. It was actually one of like the better conferences I've ever been to. And then when COVID hit, instead of just like canceling it, they moved the entire thing online. And they had like mandates for every person that had to be there from their church to like make the thing happen. But there was probably 20,000 people on Zoom doing this conference. Wow. And it was very high production. And it was like, the cost was a little bit cheaper, but you still got all of the benefits and it was safe.
Right.
And to me, like, that was the best thing you could have done because you made sure that the safety of the person showing up was held at a higher value than getting them through the door and sitting them in a seat. And I think the critique yeah. that people have of conferences that have met this year, one that I have certainly of groups like Passion, is right. that wasn't the level of care that was instilled no. into that gathering, and it shows.
Right. Part of the reason we're having this conversation is to talk about what happened at Passion this past year and like to have further conversation about Passion 2022. Before this year, I still think, you know, we could have had some conversation around purely like theology or maybe some of the harmful like spiritual manipulation things that happen at those conferences. But I think that it's really reached like a critical point because like we're still in a pandemic right. and the communities that were being affected from Passion this year are like higher risk communities. And I'm not talking about like attendees. I'm talking about the community of Atlanta, the essential workers that are in the stadium, like those type of things.
Right.
And just not having that being taken into consideration.
Yeah. And the thing too with that was so frustrating to see, and we'll talk about some of this, like all of the like mini pieces here in a second though, is the reason that Passion, I think, is in the spotlight and is the anchor for this conversation is because the Giglios have created a church environment that many churches view as the standard. And as people develop these conferences moving forward, they're going to be right. modeling them after things that they're doing here.
Right. They are an example to yeah. a lot of people.
You are leaders within this space, not just with the people following you, but the church as a whole. And you have to own up to that and show up to that in a way that actually provides a baseline that's going to be safe for people moving forward because people are going to model what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a large part of this conversation is just simply the fact that, Passion has made little to no comment about anything, which to me is a frustrating thing because know, people are going to make mistakes. Large organizations are going to make bad calls. But I think the way you handle something and you handle the fallout of something shows a lot about where you stand and what you believe and what you hold to be important. So as like a more context about Passion 2022, a few days before that conference was when the U.S. hit a new record high of COVID-19 cases because it was like right in the middle of the surge from Omicron. And they had little mention of the website or of COVID at all on their website outside of this tiny little tucked away frequently asked questions page where it mentioned some of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium policies and things like that. And just simply saying that they would abide by the city's requirements, which, as a side note, I'm from Atlanta. I've been deeply disappointed with how Atlanta has handled most of the pandemic. Like, they've just not taken it seriously. So to say you're just following Atlanta's guidelines, like, yeah, I mean, I guess I don't expect them to like instill more guidelines than the city has, but Atlanta's guidelines already were not as strict as they probably could have been. But yeah, they essentially like put the, precautions on the attendees, you know? So like they, I think one of the things I read through Mercedes-Benz policies, and it looks like they, that Passion was supposed to require masks if the ceiling was closed or something like that. But like if they opened the ceiling, then people could like take off masks, and they ended up not doing that. And maybe that wasn't the specific agreement, but, essentially, they said, we will follow Mercedes-Benz guidelines, but then they didn't actually follow a lot of Mercedes-Benz guidelines.
Right.
So, yeah. And with that, I mean, Passion is held in a predominantly Black city. And while a lot of the attendees are going to be 19 to 25, people of color have been at higher risk for COVID, and the people working in the stadiums are probably not 18 to 25, are going to be older, might be taking it back to like to their homes, crowded public transportation systems, like just really not taking into fact that yes, while the target attendees of the conference were young and lower risk, likely to be healthier, likely to be fine if they get COVID, the people around them were not, you know, not taking into consideration the fact that you're having thousands and thousands of people in a city. And what does that do to the actual city it's being held in?
Right. And that, I mean, to me just plays back into this idea of like, you're called to not just love the people who are in your church already. Like, you're called to love your neighbor, to love your community,
right,
to put them above yourself in many ways, in making sure that you're taking care and your actions are ones that are like
absolutely
moving forward safely. And that doesn't align with that at all. And when you're working with this age, like this young age range where, you know, the hope of leaders like this and conferences like this is you're instilling this sense of like leadership and spiritual value into the next generation. And then you're turning around and not leading with that example at all.
Right.
And that's so frustrating to me.
It is. Our pastors at the church I work for lately have been talking about this idea of how as a church, the first beneficiaries should be the people outside of the walls and the second beneficiaries should be the people inside the walls. And the more I think about it, the more I really think that that is such a good model for ministry, because one, if you're always thinking about, or okay, when I think about harmful things that happen within church, right? Like excluding LGBTQIA plus people from leadership, from being within like the walls of the church simply as an attendee. That's putting your people inside first because you're putting their comfortability, their like, I don't know, moral standards, instead of thinking like, how are we harming the people outside of the walls?
Right.
And in this conference, like, it seems like they are putting the attendees first, their want to attend the conference, their desire to put on this conference where the people directly there were benefiting, there we go, as opposed to what does this mean for this city, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just not putting the others' needs first.
Right. And then you look at just the structure, and this is using Passion as an example, but it is a critique that I have of like most large conferences. And it's that, you know, if you look at the lineup for this conference, It is predominantly male, predominantly straight, predominantly white, and predominantly wealthy. Like, if you look into the net worth of the Giglios, of Sadie Huff, of Christine Kane, of Levi Lusco, all people who have worked really hard to, like, build their name and their brand, and they've written books and all of these things, you find, I mean, net worth ranging from $1 million to $3 to $5 million, depending on who it is, right? Because they've built these platforms. So you have people directing and leading and coordinating this conference that sit in direct opposition to the very neighborhood that it's being held in to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, structurally, it's also not designed to really be more inclusive of people. It's really made for a specific target audience, which is pretty wealthy, pretty straight, pretty white, mostly male, you know, generally, and young, and then continuing to feed into that cycle, which I think is a whole other set of harm that is then created. But you think about all of that is happening, like you said, in the midst of a predominantly Black community. You're hosting this very white super spreader event, and then wondering why people are upset when the focus wasn't on the community that you put it in. It was on the people who were inside.
It just reeks of privilege and not seeing the harm. Like, just genuinely, right? Because I've read several, like, I was trying to play devil's advocate, and I read this, like, really well-written, it'll be linked on the website, but this really well-written student article from, it was out of Barry College, which is like a Christian college in Georgia, about the student journalist did a piece interviewing different students on campus about their opinions on passion and, like, covered a wide range of people who were for it, people who were against it. And I thought did a really good job of putting both sides. And to me, the thing that was the most compelling is, like, for the student who was for it, the main case for having it was simply that people wanted to have it, and that it was exciting to be in this room full of all these people, and that it was energizing, and that it made them, like, closer to God and deepen their faith, which, like, those are good things, right? I mean, that is good. However, when we hold that up compared to the other, like, the reasons for having it and the reasons for, like, putting it virtual, right? Because I'm not saying just cancel it altogether, but, like, there are ways to do it online. I'm pretty sure they did it. Oh, I might be wrong. I can't remember if they did it virtually the year before or if they canceled. But regardless, I think there are ways to have successful events virtually. And then that just makes it that much more exciting when we're past, well, I don't know, fingers crossed, when we come through this safely and we're able to hold large events like that in a way that's not damaging to people. Like, that makes it that much more exciting. Because, like, obviously we want to get back to quote unquote normal life. But, like, the reality is it's just not normal.
Right.
You know, and I think that, you know, for some people it's like, well, we should still be able to, like, worship in person, or this, they can't, you know, keep my faith down, or, like, whatever. But we can still, like, have active faith lives.
Right.
Not in person, you know, like, that makes me, like, worry a little bit about what the intention of, like, your church or your pastor is if you think that, like, you can only do that in person.
Right. I mean, especially when you think about how many stories in the Bible are literally were written to help sustain the faith of a people who were separated from their physical faith community.
Right.
Like, that's this idea of being able to engage God anywhere. Like, those are spiritual understandings that, like, you hope as someone matures in their faith, they begin to understand that, like, it God is much more vast, and church is a way to connect with community, and it's a beautiful thing, but God is outside the walls of the church as much as God is inside of them, if not more so, if you look at Jesus. And I think that really what ends up happening when groups aren't careful in how they structure conferences like this is you instill that idea that I can only be a good Christian if I show up to this thing and I do this thing and my faith is contingent on this experience. And that's not sustainable for them long term. And that's how you get 18 to 25 year olds who leave the church, is because they have these moments and you put all of your energy into creating this space and give them no tools to keep it going when they leave. And that's going to kill, especially as, like, digital ministry grows, it's going to kill your ability to stay connected with people, because if they can only show up and feel God, right, you're failing them the rest of the time. Like, you're not giving them the proper, right, tools. The other thing too that I do want to say is the virtual, I've been to two major virtual conferences, the VU conference and then Evolving Faith, which I think both were done really well. And they were excellent. Like, I very much enjoyed them.
Yeah.
It was different, obviously, but you still got, right, the tools. And I feel like there was a way to engage that content on my own time that made me, yeah, contemplate it more, because I wasn't forced to feed off the energy of the people in the room. I had to actually sit with what I was,
right,
feeling.
Right. It wasn't like a fire hose. You had to,
right,
sit through it.
Right. And, you know, the reality with Passion is, like, I struggle to believe that an organization of that size, where one ticket to the in-person conference was $165, they sold 55,000 tickets. I mean, that's over $9 million. I struggle to believe that with over $9 million, you couldn't have found a way,
right,
to make it accessible, virtually, or to even cut, right, down on the size. Like, have it in person, sell less, right, tickets.
Right.
What is the goal if not to pack out the house for the visual shock factor, which keeps people coming back, builds exclusivity, convinces them they want to come the next year, and also, yeah, to make some money off of it. I mean, let's be honest, they're not doing it for free. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, how much of it was financially driven? I am curious to know.
Anytime a religious space creates this little insular, like, you have to be here in order to, like, be a good Christian, whether they say that explicitly, which some spaces do,
right,
or you're just implying that, like, you know, you need to be here, or, like, this is where you're going to grow or whatever. To me, that's, like, a massive red flag, because it keeps you in this, like, insular little, like, that's where you're getting your teaching. That's the only voice you're hearing. And I feel like that's a lot of what we saw happen, like, in COVID, was, like, this fear of, if they're not in these walls, almost, like, where are they going, or, like, who are they listening to? To me, that feels very controlling of, like, instead of taking it as an opportunity to be like, look, this is the reality. These are the tools that, like, you can have as a person to engage your faith. Like, we're going to continue to do some online things. Like, this sucks. Let's acknowledge the grief of it. And let's care for our neighbors and not infect people with this sickness.
Right.
Anymore.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think kind of finding a way to encapsulate what feels like all of our feelings, because this conversation could go on forever, because there's 100 different angles, right, you can come at it from.
Right. And there's so many, like, little things.
Right. That will probably be episodes in their own right.
right.
I think at the end of the day, my overall hope is always going to err on the side of positivity, that, like, my hope and my prayer is that when people are structuring conferences like this, that the goal, right, is always to be creating a safe place for people to expand upon their faith.
Right.
And I want to believe that the initial hope in creating these things starts there. Now, I think sometimes that, right, vision gets lost in the celebrity, and it gets lost in the shock factor and in the wow of the lights, which then creates this idea to the young, impressionable person walking through the door that that's what church is, which that I think, right, is hard. And I think that there is still a place for conferences if we can find a way to do them well. Like, I think the one that I recommend to everyone is the, yes, Evolving Faith Conference, which they're coming back again this year.
Right.
Because they are intentional in their inclusivity, and I think that makes it a more rich experience.
Yeah.
And so in all of this, like, don't hear this conversation and think that that means that you have to throw out every conference you've ever been to. Like, I still go to them.
Right.
I will probably still, right, end up going to them, because, to be honest, there's not a lot of options when it comes to Christian conferences. And there is a benefit, right, to them, I think. And if,
right,
you know,
like, you can still learn,
right,
right,
like, what you're walking into. Yeah. It just might take a little more work to process through it once you're aware, right, of the stuff you don't agree with. But I also just, like, encourage you to to trust that voice in your gut that tells you what does and doesn't feel right. And if it doesn't feel right, you know, I think that that connection, that intuition, Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, might be encouraging you to check and make sure that the values of that space align with the values that you are developing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, yes, there are good things that I think come out of passion, that I think can come out of that church. I think it's just a conversation around the accountability that I think we have to hold ourselves to, the, I think, responsibility that we have as church spaces and as faith communities to be caring for everyone and not just keeping our own interests at heart. Because good intentions, while it's good to have good intentions, can also be harmful. So thinking through, like, what are the, you know, what are the consequences and who are we harming, I think is my biggest issue. And is something that we can always be thinking about. And then figuring out, yeah, like Maddie said, finding organizations that align with that, and knowing what your beliefs are, what your, like, do's and don'ts are before walking into a space like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So friends, as you go into what is soon to be, I'm sure, another gearing up of conference season, know that, like, we want to help you. So, like, if you're looking into a conference and you're like, I don't know who these speakers are, I don't know what's going on,
right?
I would love some help in, like, vetting some of this. Hit us up. We would love to walk through that with you. If we see stuff that feels exciting, we will share it on our Instagram as well, so that you can see some stuff that we think would be worth going to.
Yeah.
And just know that we're here for you, and to trust that feeling in your gut. It's a good thing to trust the feelings that you have, especially when you're trying to discern something. That's part of how we figure out how we move forward.
Yes.
And know that there is a good way to be in large community, and it's important to make sure that you're valuing the health of your neighbor in the midst of all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for listening. You can rate us, give us a 5-star review. Woo! And some comments, please, on Spotify or Apple. And yeah, follow us on Instagram at ogodpod. Our website is ogodpod.com. And we love you guys. We love connecting with you guys. Ask us your questions. If you want to be in our Discord, you can become a patron. Thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone. You're doing a wonderful job. Stay safe, stay healthy. You're killing it.
Bye.
Bye.
Maddie and Reeves are both faith leaders, and the following conversation reflects their standings and beliefs, not those of their place of employment. Thank you.